Greetings, and welcome to a Fireside Chat. This is your host, Lance White. My guest today is Katie Weatherup. Katie is a modern-day shaman whose articles have been published in Vision Magazine and Planet Lightworker. She recently finished a wonderful book called Practical Shamanism, A Guide for Walking Both Worlds. Let's welcome Katie to the show. Hi, Katie. How are you tonight?
Hi, I'm doing great. Happy to be here.
Good, good, good. I've been reading your book, and I'm really, really excited about it. Unfortunately, I didn't have time to finish it, but it's a wonderful book, and I just thought we might start out for our listeners by you giving a little background on what a shaman is, and how long does this practice go back in time?
Oh, absolutely. So I don't call myself a shaman. I actually myself a shamanic practitioner.
Oh, okay.
I think it's actually better to reserve the term shaman for indigenous practitioners who go back since the beginning of human history.
Wow.
And if you think about it, when you were dealing with an indigenous culture living off the land, you wanted to have as close and positive a relationship to the natural world as you could manage.
Uh-huh.
So the shamans of these indigenous tribes were absolutely vital because they had a direct conduit to talk to the natural world around them.
Mm-hmm.
And the principles of shamanism include this idea that the natural world has life and has spirit and that you can interact with it. So a traditional shaman would be responsible for interceding with the weather to make sure that they got the rain that they needed, or tracking where the game was. Or if someone was injured, for working on the spiritual side of their well-being for their growth and recovery.
Huh. And were they also the healers, or did they have a person who was in charge of the medicine and healing?
It was some of each. Some indigenous shamans did both. They were the medicine person, so they would do the actual patching people up.
Uh-huh.
And they were also responsible for that. For larger groups of people where there were more opportunity to specialize, you might have someone who was specifically responsible for the trance work and the ceremonies and the connection to the natural world. And another person you would go see if you got, you know, trampled by a buffalo.
Interesting. There's something that's often associated with the indigenous shamans, and I recently heard somebody else speaking about this, so I'm going to get it out on the table right away and ask you what place the sacred substances play, such as the ayahuasca.
So ayahuasca and peyote and these other substances are very much a part of a traditional indigenous practice.
Mm-hmm.
And they're absolutely great substances if you're going to live your entire life intending to work as a shaman,
mm-hmm.
and you're living in an indigenous society, and
right.
that's going to be your role, and you have an apprenticeship that goes on for, you know, 10, 20, 30 years.
Wow.
There's something that can be used very appropriately. But when you start to translate shamanic practices into the modern time,
mm-hmm.
they start being less helpful. And the problem is that these kind of substances, for someone without tons and tons of training, they open you up hugely. You're able to see into the other world immediately, which for a lot of people is very exciting. Woohoo! I'm immediately seeing into the other world. But the downside is that you really don't have the discipline and the mental focus to control what that experience is.
Right.
So I had one student who described an experience with peyote where she said she spent the entire several hours while this drug was in her system in the ghetto of the spiritual world,
wow.
where the energetic equivalent of all the pimps and hookers were hanging out. And
ooh.
It just wasn't fun. And so when you start opening those veils without the training to control them, you can have some unpleasant experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And there are arguments that you can even have some harmful or dangerous experiences with that.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it important for people to have done shadow work and work on the subconscious before they really delve into things that unleash stuff that's unpredictable? Or does it matter? Maybe that is a way to unleash it.
Well, it depends how you do it. So the shamanic journeying that I teach involves using a drum to get into an altered state, and that's a very gentle kind of experience.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone hasn't completely integrated their shadow or done a lot of work with it, they suddenly have this fabulous tool for going and working on that level of their being.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you were to simply use a substance that put you into an altered state and come up against some of your shadow aspects without necessarily a frame of reference for understanding what they were or the ability to come out of the altered state, it could be quite scary and quite unpleasant.
Right, right. Right, yes, drumming seems to be a real popular, it was not the craze that it was a few years ago, but there are little groups that do drumming, and I guess that explains why it's, you know, why it's such a crucial thing to do, because it evokes some of the other states or the other worlds. Can you tell us a little bit about what the worlds are and what we're accessing?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, drumming is a great one. It's found through indigenous cultures throughout the world. It's one of the common practices, and it does induce a light trance state. They've actually hooked people up to machines and seen that a drum beat of 3 to 5 beats per second produces theta waves in the brain. So there's a physiological change that you get when you're listening to the kind of monotonous drumming that's used for shamanic journeying.
Uh-huh.
As far as the other worlds that you see, there's a framework that I was trained in and that a lot of people use to understand the unseen world. And it's important to understand that we're just using a framework or an overlay to sort of map those unseen worlds, because it's this sort of vast, unknowable place.
Mm-hmm.
But the framework gives the conscious mind a way to engage with it.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of indigenous cultures recognize 3 different levels. There's lower world, which is the world that's below us, which is the archetypical realm of nature. It has no relationship to the Christian hell, but it's this beautiful place where power animals, who are spirits in animal form that help and support us, hang out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very beautiful and safe place that you can journey for help and healing, particularly in relationship to the physical experience.
Mm-hmm.
At the other end of the spectrum, up above us, is upper world, and that's the realm of ascended masters and teachers. So those are where the archetypes of whatever mythology or belief system that you deal with hang out. If you ever wanted to go talk to Pele or Buddha or one of those figures, you could journey into upper world and meet the exact flavor of that energy that resonated with you. So it's a very exciting way to create that very direct connection.
Wow.
And then the third world that this overlay or framework deals with is middle world. And that's the shamanic reality of the world around us. And middle world is very complicated. It contains all different times. So, you know, all space, all time, the human dream world, all the energetic representations of the physical world. So it's this very vast, very complicated place. But it's also a very rich place, because the opportunity to, say, unwind a trauma that happened to somebody 20 years ago can be found still anchored in middle world, and you can unwind it and release it. You can even go back into other lifetimes if that's part of your framework or belief system.
Wow. There's a lot there to contemplate.
Absolutely.
Do you feel that this is something that most people that is... our modern people today can use to help get in touch with nature and their connection, which seems to be becoming less and less strong to natural things and spirits?
Absolutely. It's a wonderful way to do that. I took a trip to the UK, and before I ever, you know, set foot there, I'd already journeyed to the places that I was really excited about visiting.
Mm.
And it's a very, very powerful way to connect with nature and to understand nature in a different way. In one of my classes, I have the students go and talk to a tree. And it's amazing the kind of information they come back with, because from a modern perspective, you go, huh, talk to a tree? What am I going to get? But having done this exercise and seen it done with a very large group of people, everybody's coming back with, wow, you know, I was seeing this different perspective and this different energy and this kind of passiveness of just being able to just relax into the world without this striving and movement that humans do.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. course, my tree told me, you know, you really don't have the patience of a tree, so, you know, you can come back and ask again, but there's stuff you still need to learn about that, because I tend to be very active in the world, and so it's nice to get that balancing energy and be able to make that kind of connection.
Yeah. Does each tree have its own spirit, or is there just one spirit tree, and they are all going to be connected together, or how does that work?
My experience is that each tree has its own spirit.
Okay.
You could look at it much like humanity. You know, if you're talking to certain religious philosophies, humanity is all one. We're all the same energy. But we experience ourselves very much as individuals.
Yeah, yeah.
And with trees, I find that there's a very definite personality. If you go into a grove of trees and just ask for the right one for you to attract your attention, very quickly you'll zoom in on one particular tree, not just any tree there. So each one does seem to have its individual flavor and information and experience of life.
So do you have to do anything special to communicate with trees and with nature, or does it require any kind of special training, or can anybody just do it?
Sort of some of both.
Okay.
In one way, anybody can just do it, but the hardest thing to get past is this idea that we have this framework in the sort of modern technological world of, well, that's silly, that's impossible.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what the training does is helps you to unlearn that. So you start to open up to these possibilities like, oh, hey, if I just tune into the tree, let's see what information comes in. Let's go and have this experience. So people do better often with a class or a framework that where an instructor says, go forth, find a tree, sit there for, you know, 15 minutes and see what information you get.
Huh.
Whereas it's not necessarily something that would occur to the average person walking down the street.
Right.
So,
right.
It's not that ability and knowledge isn't innate within us, but it's easier to access and it's faster to access it if there are people giving you a little bit of a roadmap.
Yeah, I can see that. Also, there's mention about a power animal, and I've never actually located my own, but can you tell us what a power animal is and how that works?
Absolutely. A power animal is, in traditional shamanic terms, the spirit of an animal looks in on an infant and goes, wow, this child is so helpless. There's no way they're going to be able to make it on their own. There's no way they're going to survive on their own. And they take pity on the baby and come into relationship with them to protect them and take care of them. And so for people, often their power animal is an animal that they have a very strong affinity for.
Mm-hmm.
Power animals are particularly wonderful because they help the physical world to be safe.
Oh.
There are a lot of our other guides who work with, well, you know, your sole purpose is to, you know, make music or to build beautiful bridges or, you know, to create art, and you're working on this life lesson of how to connect with others with an open heart or whatever it ends up being.
Mm.
And they're more concerned with the big picture, the sweeping life lessons and that kind of thing.
Mm.
Whereas power animals are right there working with you on the everyday, when the idiot cuts across the freeway, make sure that they miss me instead of hitting me kind of work. And so they're very, very good for helping you be more solid, more protected. They also often lend their medicine. So, for example, the rabbit is very good at holding perfectly still and not being noticed by the predator. So many people, particularly, you know, children who are growing up in violent or abusive situations, may have worked with that energy to be as safe as they possibly could in that situation.
Huh. Interesting. You mentioned spirit guides. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And how many spirit guides do most of us have? Do we all have spirit guides, or do we have like one for one thing and one for another? Or, I mean, I guess it varies from person to person, but so maybe you could tell us a little more about that one.
Yeah, absolutely. So everybody has spirit guides.
Okay.
We all have guides that are working with us and watching over us and helping us out. As far as the number, I've never really gotten a precise count, but one thing that I do know is the number goes way, way, way up anytime someone embarks on a spiritual path or is in a time of great change and transition. So if somebody's just really doing the same thing every day and just kind of going on, they still have guides that are watching over them. But when people are really moving forward and making life changes and going through transitions and growing and learning and expanding their awareness, more and more guides come in to help them and support them and work with them. For me personally, my guides tend to specialize. So I have some that are kind of with me all the time and are deal with me in the sort of day-to-day basis. I have a specific guide who, if I'm helping souls to cross over or move on, comes in very specifically.
Mm-hmm.
I have another guide who works very specifically to assist me with soul retrieval. So they're all different guides who come in from different purposes. And you can even specifically request a guide like, okay, I need more information about whatever, and you'll have new guides come in. For example, if a woman is getting ready to be a mother for the first time, she would have new guides come in to support her in the mother experience, because this would be new territory.
This brings up an interesting question, that during times of spiritual change and so on, a lot of people feel that we're going through some kind of major shift now in consciousness, either that the Earth is raising her level of consciousness from the third dimension to a higher one, or that the whole universe is shifting upwards and mankind is going through some kind of evolutionary process that... And some claim that that ends in 2012 or begins. Does that resonate for you? And if so, are there a lot more guides here to help us during this time?
I would say absolutely. So as far as my experience, what I keep getting is absolutely humanity and the Earth are all raising our vibration.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of stuff that we're clearing away. And if you think about when you do like a physical cleanse, there are all these detox symptoms that come up. You might feel get flu-like symptoms or whatever. And a lot of what humanity is going through has a lot to do with that, I believe. So we're raising our vibration. And all of a sudden, all these old patterns that were pretty comfortable and we kind of made peace with are suddenly getting really uncomfortable.
Uh-huh.
And there's being this huge push to sort of clean up our karmic business in a really big hurry, to get clear, to let go of all these layers. So it's a very powerful time. It's a very transformative time.
Uh-huh.
On the other side of the veil, it's a really exciting and great time. The guides are like, oh, this is so fabulous. You know, all this time with humanity kind of doing same old, and now all of a sudden, wow, we're changing, we're growing, we're reactivating all these psychic gifts and awarenesses, and we're even when we're in the middle of like, oh, this is so hard and this is so terrible, what's really happening is this huge clearing process. So it's very exciting. I don't necessarily get a strong sense personally of, you know, the relevance of one given year or another.
Yeah.
I know there are a lot of prophecies, but my guides mostly don't do time. They mostly do, you know, yes, the energy is really big and it's really lined up, or it's, you know, it's kind of far off. And what I'm seeing is we're right in the middle of really clearing some stuff.
Oh, yeah, I can agree with that one.
Yeah, and... I'm seeing a lot of clients who, you know, are coming and we're just doing a lot of wrapping up of like old past life business.
All these
kind of things of just, you know, healing much faster. And it's exciting because a lot of healing gifts are coming in to help people heal and clear much faster. It doesn't have to happen in the old slow way. It can happen in the really accelerated way, which is exciting.
Mm-hmm. And then as stuff gets cleared, doesn't that create more of an opening for the other side to communicate with us?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting easier and easier to tune in psychically. It's just much, much easier at this time than it was 20 years ago.
It seems I read something recently channeled from somebody from the other side, and it just knocked me over. It was so profound. And, you know, basically he was saying that, you know, he left because he wanted to work from the other side to help us as we go through our transition. And it really opened my eyes, you know, that we really are in some kind of transitionary phase, and that this clearing is not bad. It's opening up, you know, that the stuff that's coming up is being released. And it's not just our stuff, too. You know, it's probably 4.5 billion years of it.
Absolutely.
I wanted to ask you about shape-shifting. I know that the indigenous shamans are said to be able to do shape-shifting. Is that something that you know about?
I don't know very much about shape-shifting. I know that I've worked a lot in shamanic journeys with my guides having me shape-shift into other animals.
Okay.
But I was in this journey in this trance state. As far as whether a human being could literally turn into an animal,
right.
With enough training and ability, I have no reason to think it's not true, although I have no personal direct experience with that, so I can't really comment. But there's a lot that you can do with just shifting your personal energy and, you know, either blending into the background and not being noticed or being very vibrant and being the center of things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting to play consciously with what you're wanting to put out into the world and what you're wanting to bring back and kind of how you deal with that. We do it very unconsciously. You think about someone in the grocery store with their arms crossed, you're like, ooh, not going to talk to them. I'll give them lots of space. Or somebody who's smiling and happy and inviting. But there's a lot of ability to change our aspect and our energy to very consciously, and that's a fun process.
For those people who are more centered in different paradigms, for instance, those people who believe in angels, how would that tie into the idea of spirits from a shamanistic view?
So somebody who is picking up this shamanic journeying set of skills already has a really solid framework.
Mm-hmm.
So when they got into the unseen world, that's the framework that they would see. So when they met their guides would appear as angels, and their guides would work with them as the aspects of whatever angels that they most resonated with.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the unseen world. I always tell my students, our guides are really much more adaptable and flexible than we are. They love us. They want to communicate with us. They're excited. They're trying, you know, 50 different ways to get the message through. So if showing up looking like an angel is going to do it, they're totally on board with that.
Cool.
And it's not. I wouldn't say that seeing an angel is any more correct than seeing a jaguar. It's just paradigms and who are you going to listen to?
Yeah, or seeing a reptilian or a gray.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the unseen world? I'm just fascinated with that part. What are some of your experiences of you know, what are your visions, and what do you see when you're over there?
I see all different kinds of things. The biggest thing is it's really vast, so it's just an absolutely huge place.
Uh-huh.
They're all different kinds of energies, and I don't know. It's a little bit like, you know, trying to describe it to someone who's never left Kansas what the ocean looks like. It looks different for everybody. One journey I did, which was really interesting, was to look at the moment beyond the moment of my death into what was the territory beyond. And that was a really fascinating journey.
Huh.
And I'd be happy to share that if you think it's appropriate.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, now I want to preface this by saying that I had an entire class full of people who did this journey with me, and everybody had a completely different vision and experience. So I by no means have the correct scoop on the moment after death. But this was my experience, was that I went into this mist that was orange and red and very beautiful. And onto the other side, there was like this huge big party where I was greeted by all the loved ones that had moved on, and in my case, it was a lot of animals, because that's been a lot of the beloved ones who have passed over to the other side.
Uh-huh.
And there was all this greeting and joyfulness, some review of our life experience together. They were all kind of laughing at me, because everybody over on the other side was like, okay, you're here, and this is a great exercise, but we all know you're not dead. You don't belong here yet, but sure, check it out.
Wow.
I had the opportunity to start talking to some guides there was like this council that kind of met, and it was like, well, you know, for the next lifetime, I think it would be really interesting to do this. You know, I'm kind of done with this experience over here, but I'd really like to try this one. They're like, okay, that works. It's too early to set anything in stone, but we can do that.
Do you get a break?
Yeah. yeah, so definitely, yes, there's definitely a break. You have lots of time to rest and recover.
Oh, good.
Although one thing that I've seen is some of the people this lifetime who have chronic fatigue are people who didn't take the time to rest. The energy got so exciting that they just rushed back and they reincarnated right away.
Oh.
It was so exciting and they wanted to be back here.
Interesting.
Yeah. As part of that journey, I also saw like places where people could just drop off their energetic baggage. You know, that whole thing about go to the airport and lose your baggage. It was like this machine at the airport where you could put all this like black gunky stuff that you'd carried around all your life onto this conveyor belt that went into this machine that turned it into rainbows. So, transmuting and releasing the energy.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, there was also space for people who had had a really difficult lifetime to just spend some time being with that experience and reviewing it. We don't think of it that way as much, but there's actually a really huge gift and blessing to be able to just sit with feelings that are really tough. We spend so much of this incarnation, run away, an uncomfortable feeling.
Mm.
And so there was just space for people to just be with things that were really heavy and really difficult. And, you know, we pick different incarnations to experience different things. And one of the things we play with is the use of power. And so the lifetimes where we've been the one to misuse power are heavy and challenging lifetimes. So there was space over there to just be able to sit and review and be with that experience and integrate it in one's own time rather than needing to, you know, move it along really fast.
Mm-hmm. And come from survival and have to...
Absolutely.
Yeah. Interesting. It seems almost like some people say that we're in a time when the abuses of power and corruption have reached another high point, or low point, as it were, similar to Atlantis and some other previous cultures that are talked about. Do you have the feeling that there's some kind of replay going on in our society today with all the wars and things?
I think it's more of a detox process that we're going through.
Okay.
But it's like clearing out that energy.
Okay.
And the way I look at the experience with Atlantis was we came very quickly into the combination of having physical form with these really high vibrational gifts. And there was a certain amount of, you know, just like children playing with, you know, fire. Wee, this is fun. And then kaboom, we blew ourselves up. Oh, that wasn't quite what we were going for. There were ways that I think in Atlantis we didn't really understand empathy or other people's point of view or...
Yeah.
All of these kind of things. And so what I see happening after Atlantis is the vibration coming down.
Mm.
And we spend a lot of time just really focusing on the physical experience,
mm-hmm.
and really having that be the center of our consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Even in these indigenous societies, you didn't have the whole tribe studying to be the shaman. You had one individual who was that on behalf of the tribe, and everybody else was busy, you know, getting food and making shelter and all those kind of things. And so then what's happening now, in my experience, is our vibration is rising, we're getting these gifts back, and we're getting them back with all the perspective on having been on every side of the misuse of power,
mm-hmm.
in the hopes that we have really integrated the lesson of honoring everyone else as well as being powerful. So how can we be very, very powerful? How can we have these really powerful gifts with this deep, you know, down to the very essence of who we are, this understanding of everyone's divinity, their right to make their own choices, their right to free will. And I think that that's the really exciting thing that some of the souls rushed back to be a part of. I heard one channel who said at one point, which I thought was just hysterical, that the energy changed. There was this oath that was taken in Atlantis. If there was ever an opportunity to do this again and to make it better, all these souls were going to come back.
Uh-huh.
And that opportunity, you know, happened. and all the souls came back, and they had a big, huge party that lasted a decade, and that was the 60s.
Oh, I believe that.
Yeah, I thought that was just a great way to put it. And
yeah.
So there, you're seeing all these really old souls moving into this world and helping to ease it through the shift and the growing pain.
Mm-hmm. I have to ask you about something that, most people, I keep hearing people say that they, when they're journeying various places, that they're attacked by demons or maybe they're astral spirits. What would you call that experience? Is that a subjective thing or projection of one's own subconscious, or are there actually entities that maybe are not quite so positive to meet out there in the other worlds?
Okay. There absolutely are entities. It's something I don't necessarily talk a lot about because people get really scared.
Yeah.
And the truth is that people can learn to do shamanic journeying and pretty much not run into anything nasty out there.
That's good.
It's one of the reasons I strongly advise people against taking peyote or ayahuasca.
Yes.
Because
yes.
Then they really don't have their natural barriers and their natural filters, and
yep.
when they get really scared, they can attract some unpleasant entities.
Yes.
Now, my experience with entities is there's some big ones and there's some nasty ones, but those are few and far between.
Uh-huh.
Most of the things that aren't so pleasant are things like souls of people who have passed on but not really realized they're dead, so they didn't quite move on. Or beings from other dimensions, and just things that are kind of out of place.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell people, if they're worried about entities, that, having a really negative friend who's, always hanging around and grumpy and miserable
mm-hmm.
is going to do you a lot more harm than an entity with the same vibration.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not particularly harmful. But when people get really, really stuck in being angry all the time or really, hating the world or certain kinds of things, they can attract some entities.
Mm-hmm.
As far as meeting them in the shamanic world, if you're learning the kind of basic techniques like I outline in my book to go and come into the shamanic world, you really shouldn't run into any of these at all.
Mm-hmm.
Unless part of your work or your purpose or what your guides are working with you is to clear these and help these move on. If you're just hanging out, if you're just, going to lower world or upper world, you're going to be just fine. You're not going to run into any of this. And there really aren't entities in upper or lower world. They're all hanging out in middle world. So one way that you can avoid them altogether is just go into one of these very safe and beautiful places where everybody you meet is really going to be on your side.
Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that one.
Yeah.
It sounds like fun. And you also teach classes in how to do these, access these other worlds, don't you?
I do, yeah. I teach in the San Diego area.
Uh-huh.
I have a one-day class that teaches people how to do shamanic journeying and some evening classes that I do that outlines that. And I also have a six-month program that goes very much in-depth into shamanic journeying. We work with past lives and ancestral healing.
Wow.
All sorts of things.
I wish I lived closer to you. Can you tell people how they can reach you? We'll do that again at the end, but I don't want to forget.
Absolutely. My website is handsoverheart.com.
Mm-hmm.
So that's www.handsoverheart.com.
Mm-hmm.
And that has a link to my book and all my classes and all sorts of information. My phone number is 619-518-7658. So people can call me directly.
Great. Great. I wish I lived closer to you. I would do your six-month class for sure.
Yeah.
And, I'm going to finish your book probably by the weekend, and it's just so wonderful to explore these other realms with an open mind, and just, let myself go with my imagination and not make any judgments about it, that these are other worlds and just see what they feel like.
Absolutely, yeah. One of the challenges people have, they think shamanic journeying is really mysterious, but they actually get there and they're like, oh, that it can't be that easy. I must be making it up. And I always encourage people to journey for someone else with their permission, of course, because then you don't know the answer. Because a lot of times if you have a really critical question and you've been asking for guidance and you've been wanting guidance, your guides have been dropping it in every chance they can get. They're bringing it to you in dreams. They're bringing it to you in what you watch on TV or what you see walking down the street. So you get into shamanic reality and it's the same message, and then you go, I already knew that, I'm making it up.
That's funny. You mentioned the dream state. Some people just do dream work by itself. How do the dream realms take place, and where does all that come from?
So lots of people do, they travel shamanically or astrally or however you want to describe it, while they're asleep.
Right.
And the difference between doing a shamanic journey and moving into this state while you're dreaming is that the conscious mind is engaged when you're doing a shamanic journey.
Mm-hmm.
And in the dream time, the only part of the conscious mind that is engaged in the dream time is whatever you've been able to drop into your subconscious. So some people, if they're doing dream work consciously, develop an ability to basically tell their subconscious, hey, get information about that while you're out there.
Uh-huh.
And their subconscious will bring that back, and they'll have really vivid dreams with a lot of information in them. It's the same world, but when you're doing it in your sleep, your conscious mind, which is the one that holds all the framework of the illusion of, you know, of we're only our physical bodies or all of those kinds of things, just fall away. And so we know how to journey totally naturally, totally comfortably. There's no opportunity to go awry or end up in the wrong place.
Mm-hmm.
But our conscious mind isn't coming along in the same way, so we can't get information as directly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's great to ask for a message before you go to sleep about something, but I really like the clarity of being able to go meet my guide face-to-face and go, tell me what's going on with this situation.
There's that sounds wonderful. I'd love to do that.
Yeah, it's really powerful.
Yeah.
And it's something you can ask questions about, everything from, you know, what can I do to get better sleep at night, or what's the optimal diet for me to eat for health, or how much exercise should I be getting, what are the next steps on my spiritual path, what are my life lessons. This situation really, really was unpleasant. You know, what was the higher purpose of this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what can I do to increase my financial abundance? Any question that you might lay awake at night wondering about, you can go and 15 minutes later have a direct, clear answer. And
I like that.
Yeah, it's really powerful.
Is it possible to meet one's ancestors while journeying?
Absolutely. Our ancestors come in to help us and support us and take care of us. So you may not be able to meet all your ancestors. Some of them aren't available. If it's somebody who's recently passed on, you really need to give them time to adjust to not being in a physical body before you go look them up. So the day after Uncle Joe dies, don't go journey to him and go, ah! But most of your ancestors will communicate and will come to you going back many, many, many generations. And they're really great shamanic journeys you can do. You can journey to ask what the gifts are of your line, because they're very specific gifts from your heritage that will come in. And you can also journey to do ancestral healing. You know, they're gifts that come down through family lineages, but they're also sometimes some sort of traumatic things. For example, a family might, who had a number of generations of being just incredibly painfully poor, might really have a scarcity consciousness rooted that gets handed down from generation to generation. And those patterns are really anchored, and it's really hard to shake it just on your own.
Mm.
But you can do ancestral healing and go back and do healing work for your ancestors many generations ago to release that, and then it will heal the entire line forwards and backwards, including all the living descendants. It doesn't necessarily take away their individual permutation of that, but it takes the structure out of place, which makes it much easier to shift those kinds of energies.
Mm, interesting.
Yeah.
What role does ritual play?
So, lots and lots of shamanic practitioners are very, very ritualistic.
Mm-hmm.
You hear about things like sweat lodges or pipe ceremonies, and lots of things that allow you to really get into a deep trance state. There are dances, there are herbs that are used, there are all sorts of traditional practices. Mm-hmm. And those are wonderful. I personally don't have a very ritualistic practice. Mm-hmm. I'm back on the whole tree telling me I wasn't that patient. Likewise with my shamanic journeying, I pretty much want to be able to drop in within a matter of moments, mm-hmm. and be talking to my guides. And so I tend to have a very simple set of practices. I pretty much just lay down, put on my drumming CD, and go into shamanic reality and do all my work there.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas other people surround it with a great deal of ritual, and ritual is beautiful, and ritual is very good for anchoring an intent when you take your conscious attention off of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if you're doing a space clearing, you can do the immediate work of just clearing the space and moving the energy, however you end up doing that. But you might want to anchor that intention by putting things around in the house that will help continue to keep it that way, like bowls of salt to absorb negativity, for example, is a really good one. And then when you're not thinking about it, you've already charged this bowl of salt with your intention to absorb negativity
mm-hmm.
when it comes into
mm-hmm.
the house, mm-hmm. and you can go on about whatever business you're working with.
Mm, I like that one. It's a
yeah.
good one. Should we worry about the state of the earth and how it's being abused today? I mean, is that something that, I mean, of course we should,
mm-hmm.
but is this something that we can address at this time, or do we need to heal ourselves first? And, you know, there can be maybe a simultaneous thing. It seems like we've neglected her so much,
mm-hmm.
you know, that it's going to take a lot of united effort to put things in a put it right.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the first thing I get very clearly that the earth is doing just fine.
Okay.
Humanity may not survive, but the earth will be fine. And what I understand is the earth's going through this vibration change in this ascension process as well.
Wow.
And what I teach my students, one of the just really important things to just be mindful of is when you're dealing with your personal energy, there's all the physical world stuff, and we're really familiar. You can do recycling, you can cultivate clean forms of energy. We're all really clear on the physical. On the energetic shamanic side, when one of the things that we've historically done and that you see taught in a lot of metaphysical things is just to ground your negative energy into the earth. Stagnant
yeah.
stuck energy, you don't want any more put into the earth. And what I always tell my students is, to make sure you do that with a very clear intention that you're giving this energy to the earth as compost. Because the earth can recycle it, but you don't want to have it be an intent of just, I'm dumping this. You want to say, I'm giving it to the earth and sending energy behind it to have it be transmuted, and sending intention so that it's transmuted.
Okay.
So that right there is a very positive kind of thing. There's also an opportunity to do a lot of really good shamanic work with the earth.
I think we might have a phone call.
Okay.
Hello?
Yeah, hi, good
hi.
Evening.
Yeah, did you have, who are you, and do you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, I'm
great.
Kim in Louisiana. Hi, Katie.
Hi.
I did have a question. I've had a couple dream visions about what I suspect are actually kind of co-dreaming from my son or my husband, but I suspect it's my son.
Uh-huh.
And there's a very bad guy beating up my son in his dreams. And I confronted him once and asked what he was doing and asked why he was doing it, and he said he was doing it because he could.
Uh-huh.
And I'm trying to figure out how I can help my son, who's only 7.
Oh.
Okay. So is your son seeming to be experiencing any distress of any kind?
Not really. I mean, ever since he's a baby, he had somewhat little night terrors or whatever,
mm-hmm.
but I never really connected it until recently.
Huh.
And he I don't know if it's a past life thing, but I suspect it's not. I suspect it's like somebody who's kind of actually picking on me, but because I'm strong enough to take care of myself. And so what I try to do is send him protective energy, and try to kind of guide him into, as I fall asleep, guide him into another kind of a good, pleasant state. But I'm still kind of surprised, like I said, that I'm catching these glimpses as I'm falling asleep or waking up that are not good images.
Okay. there are a couple of things that I would recommend right off the bat. I'd recommend you keep some white candles burning in your house.
Okay.
This is an absolutely classic shamanic technique that you find in a lot of cultures for clearing away not-so-helpful energies and entities. Virgin de Guadalupe are particularly good for that, but it can be any white candle with just that intent that the energy of the protective archetypes come in and protect you and your son. There's some herbs you can burn. Sage and dragon's blood are some really good ones to burn. And they'll just kind of help clear the environment, because if you can get your immediate space cleared where you're sleeping, that's going to make it much harder for anything to come in and bother you or bother your son. And one of the ways that we're most vulnerable to this kind of energy is actually our fear. So the more that you can do to feel really powerful and really solid and really protected, the less ability anything's going to have to interfere with you. So whatever helps to make you feel safe and protected, whatever ritual, whatever process is going to be really helpful, because that puts you back into your power in a really solid way.
Yeah, that's good advice. Thanks.
Yeah. Now, I also work with individual sessions, so this is something that I could take a look shamanically if you were called to do that, but the getting the room feeling safe at night is really helpful.
Yeah, that did help a lot. So the white candles, should I plan on burning them during the day or at night, or just kind of burn them, or burn them all night? Or
I would definitely burn them all night. I would also burn them during the day. I'd burn them 24 hours a day for a while. You can get the nice tall white candles, the 7-day candles from like the grocery store, and they're pretty inexpensive.
Yeah.
And I would just do a space clearing. I'd put some dishes of salt around. I'd burn some herbs. I'd keep the candles burning for a while.
But what about the saging that the house? Would that be helpful?
Saging, absolutely. It just helps clear out energy.
Mm.
When you sage, make sure that you have a window open, because you want the energy to have a pathway to go through.
Okay.
Great. Terrific.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a good evening. Bye.
Bye-bye. That was a good question. That's very practical advice, and I really like what you had to say about fear, because that really is, you know, fear is the mind killer, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of people are afraid of, you know, various things in that are going on in the conspiracy theories and so on and so forth, but it's the fear that really is the root of it, and that's something that we can let up and process, and that's part of the clearing, isn't it, that you're talking about?
Absolutely. Mm. You know, there, by and large, and this isn't 100%, but by and large, there's nothing that things that aren't in physical form can do to you.
Mm-hmm.
You're much,
mm-hmm.
much safer dealing with an unhappy entity than, like, a scary ex-boyfriend, for example. But yeah, when you start to have that energy of fear, you attract that energy.
Mm-hmm.
It's that principle that like attracts like, and you can actually draw things to you. It was really interesting. I had one client who called me up and did a session with me, and his major complaint was he was under psychic attack. He was being psychically attacked.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, okay. And so I talked to him, and he came from a culture where that was a very central idea. So he'd literally gotten this concept with his mother's milk. And so I'm like, okay, well, I'll work with that, and, you know, thinking, okay, I'll do the journey, I'll shore up his protections, I'll bring in more power animals, I'll make sure his auric field is really strong and solid, and all these things I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I get into shamanic reality, and his auric field is all torn up, and there are all these entities around him, and I'm looking at this and going, wow, what's going on? And my guides turn to me and say, you need to tell him to stop doing black magic.
Oh, my God.
And so I did all the cleanup, and I got everything in place, and I went back to him, and I explained to him that he needed to stop doing it. And what his guide said is there was nobody attacking him.
Huh.
He had this idea that people were attacking him, and so he attacked them with black magic, thinking they were attacking him. And what that did is attracted everything nasty in the nearby vicinity to, like, you know, here, come on over.
Wow.
And because he was consciously engaging with this energy, his
uh-huh.
guides weren't protecting him. they just stepped back and went, okay, dude, you know, you need to learn this lesson of why you don't try to hurt people with your will and intention.
Yeah.
So obviously you need to experience this. So they weren't protecting him. Now, in the ordinary course of events, we all have guides and we all have power animals, and they are very invested in protecting us. And so as long as you don't engage with that kind of energy, as long as you don't use your will with an intent to harm others, even if somebody had that intention towards you, your guides are absolutely there to intercept it and to protect you and to keep you safe.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yes, I think that's really important to remember that, you know, there's nothing that can happen to us here in the physical world. And, you know, most likely it's going to be something that's going to happen outside of these realms, you know, from somebody in the physical world.
Absolutely, yeah. Much riskier driving down the freeway than doing shamanic journeys.
Yeah, absolutely. And also on the power animals, you said something on your website about helping people find their power animals.
Absolutely. If people sign up for my mailing list, I do a free power animal reading. So anybody who goes just to the front page of the website at handsoverheart.com, and there's a link right there, and they can click on it and sign up for my mailing list. And they just have to tell me that they want me to identify a power animal because I won't tune in if I don't have permission. I don't think it's ethical to look at people on that level if I don't have permission. As long as they give me permission, I'll email them back usually within about a week and identify a power animal for them.
Do some people have more than one power animal, and can their power animal change during a lifetime? Or?
Absolutely. Most people have some core power animals that pretty much stay with them all the way through. But we have power animals that come in and go. Most people have more than one, and sometimes I identify power animals that people kind of already knew, and sometimes it's new ones coming in. But if you were going through, say, a really transformational period of time, you might get a raven or a snake or a butterfly, some of these animals that work specifically with that process of transformation.
Interesting. I might just do that.
Yeah.
I've never found out what mine is, so you know, it's an easy way to do it, just sign up for your newsletter.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I email every month with a message directly from my guide. So I do a journey specifically with a message for the mailing list.
Wonderful.
The last one that went out was how to align with the change in seasons. I've dealt with topics of, okay, we're going through this big, huge change. How can you have a good experience as the vibration changes and everyone's being really stressed and having a tough time with this?
That's very helpful. I was reading an article in Planet Lightworker that you wrote called The Mythical Description. I was noticing that you had there was a lot of interesting stuff about Merlin and so forth, and you were in England and Wales, and you mentioned ley lines and vortices. Can you tell us a little bit more about that trip and also about the Earth's ley lines and vortices?
Absolutely, that was just an amazing trip. I think my favorite part was some spirit release work that I got to do in Scotland. It was one of those nights where I couldn't sleep, so I'm like, okay, I'll go do a journey. And I journeyed to basically ask permission of the spirits of the land to come and be there. And they said that was fine. And I asked if I could pick up rocks. And they said, well, you'll have to discuss that with the rock in question. And then they invited me to help some spirits move on. And, you know, there's been all this violence and warfare and things like that for such a long time over that bit of land. And so what they did is they had me stand in the center of this bubble and invite all these spirits to move on and call down their loved ones that had gone before to basically light the way. And I got this sense of just like thousands of souls just moving on.
Wow.
Which was really amazing.
Wow.
The ley lines are very, very powerful. They move through the earth. And vortexes are all different. People are very drawn to vortexes because they're exciting and there's a lot of energy, but all vortexes are not created equal.
Okay.
I went to one in Sedona, and I'm all excited. Wee, I'm going to go see the vortex. And I got a poster of the vortex, and I'm like, ooh, this doesn't feel good. And I tuned in and checked with my guides, and they went, yeah, this vortex is about recycling Earth energy. So all the stuff that's stagnant and stuck and not feeling well, it grabs, it shreds, and it recycles back. So if you stick your very organized energetic field in the middle of this vortex, there's some shredding action going on. Not a huge amount, but you might feel kind of ill and kind of off for a couple of days if you went and sat in the vortex for a few hours.
Yeah, I've heard that from other people, too, about Sedona.
Yeah, yeah. It's a beautiful, beautiful place, but there's...
That's not the right vortex to go to these
days.
Yeah,
or at least the one that I went to. I didn't do an exhaustive survey. One was enough for me.
Yes. So tell us some more about the ones in England and Wales.
I really connected strongly to the energy there. In Glastonbury, England, the Mary and the Michael ley lines run through, and they cross in several places, and they create vortexes. And it's just a really beautiful, sweet, nurturing energy.
Mm.
And it feels like a really beautiful balance of the male and female.
Mm.
There's the Chalice Well, which is this very, very, very ancient healing spring. And then right next to it, there's this mountain, the Tor, that has a tower dedicated to Michael, St. Michael. And you can climb up that, so you have the masculine and the feminine right there in balance. And it's just a really magical place. The veil gets really thin. And the article that you referred to, I wrote about how those myths and stories of Avalon and Camelot and all of these kinds of things were more how to put this wonderful energetic experience into language, because it's so rich and there's so much there. But it's so hard to talk about, you know, what did the energy feel like,
mm-hmm.
other than, wow, you got to experience it.
Mm-hmm.
And for anybody who can't afford to jump on a plane and head over to Glastonbury, England, this is something that, again, you could access through a shamanic journey. You could go through those steps and learn and take a shamanic journey and go there and feel what the energy is like in a very pure form.
Well, that sounds wonderful. So, like the Mary and the Michael lines, those we associate those with the angel and the mother, but that's an energy, right?
It is.
Okay.
Those are the labels that have been put on them most recently, and both the Mary and the Michael are just beautiful, wonderful archetypes. So they're perfect for describing that energy. I'm sure they had much older names going back further. But we tend to again with that framework that I was talking about, the idea of the mother or Mary, it's a framework for a protector and this loving, nurturing female energy, and it's a way to engage with that archetype.
Hmm. Yeah, it seems like it's much more readily available to us when we can imagine something that relates to us, as opposed to, you know, this energy grid, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I was named after Lancelot, so, you know, I know a little bit about the myth of, you know, King Arthur and all that.
Okay.
But would you like to share what would you like to share with our audience before we reach the end of our wonderful hour?
I don't know. I can tell you a little bit about a different take that I have on Lancelot.
Okay.
Which is there are different stories and there are different energies, and one of the stories of Camelot is it existed simultaneously in a lot of different dimensions.
Oh.
And there's many stories of Lancelot that didn't set up a triangle, because the idea, if you go back pre-Christianity, there wasn't this concept that polyamory was bad, and so there were some really beautiful stories of having this very strong, very loving connection between this woman and these two men, rather than this betrayal story that got put onto it later. And it seems like a time when the veils got really thin and a lot of the gifts that had been available, say, back at Atlantean time, started to peek through into our world, which is why it resonates so strongly and so intensely for us.
Wow. Well, you know, this hour has just flown by. It's been a real journey, and I want to thank you for sharing your time with us. For the audience, make sure that you visit Katie's website, and you can request your power animal from her by, you know, letting her know that you'd like it at www.handsoverheart.com. And like I said, I'm working on her book now, which is called Practical Shamanism, A Guide for Walking in Both Worlds. And it's fascinating. So I highly recommend that as well. Katie, thank you so much for sharing your time with us, and you've been delightful.
Oh, my pleasure. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Oh, great. Wonderful. And for the audience, be sure and stay tuned for my friend Liz Miller, who hosts the Otherware Show, and I know she has an exciting show lined up tonight, so don't miss a minute. Again, Katie, thanks, and I will bid you adieu, and enjoy your weekend.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye, everybody.